more than bananas, how the Christian faith works for me and the whole universe. Episode 2. Let's get ontological. I'm going to suggest a creator who is infinite in every direction. This saves time. We could, of course, suggest a different kind of God, one more powerful than us, but not going the whole God hog. Such a being would be able to create us, perhaps, but he would leave the question open as to what greater being or what clever laws created him. It becomes like the kids' game of name the biggest number you can. 4 million.
400 million. 400 million million million. 400 million 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 squintillion. Squintillion isn't a number. Yes, it is. I saw it in a book. All right, then. 400 million 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 squintillion and one.
Pause for a fight. We may as well just escalate everything to infinity and eternity and see what the view is like when we do this. Let's first imagine a God who is eternal. Now, eternity isn't just a very long time, like when you're waiting for your wife to get ready, or when you're listening to a boring person who says, aggressively to hold the floor while they marshal more boring things in their boring head to bore you with. Either of these things can feel like eternity, but they're not the real thing. To be eternal is to be beyond the reach of time, but to be really eternal and really God is to be able to reach into time also, before the earth and the world, before the mountains rose and sunk, further back than the Big Bang, forever God. Yet also able to reach into the world of cause and effect and stir it like sugar in coffee. A God untrammeled, timeless and timely. The Time Lord. Such a God must see things differently from those of us who are restricted to the good ship here and now, tugged along the current of time. For one thing, he must see the big picture, the whole story of our universe, and the origin and destiny of humanity must be spread out before him like a rumpled duvet. Second, it must be hard if you're an eternal being to decide what is big and what is small. A moment, a millennium, an eon are equally brushstrokes on the great canvas. A brief friendship between you and the Almighty may be as important to him as the whole history of the Chinese Empire or the age of the dinosaurs. It's hard to separate things into their relative importance because they're all exquisitely necessary parts of the whole. Take the gold ring on my finger as an example. Physics tells us gold is made when giant stars explode. Then over billions of years, gold dust spreads across the universe. Finally, it coalesces into being a part of planet Earth. Perhaps that part of planet Earth that is found in a mine in South Africa. This gold is dug up and becomes my wedding ring. Perhaps when I die, it lies with me again in the soft earth until the sun becomes a red giant and melts the earth and returns the gold to the interstellar void. From the view of an eternal being, how do you tell the story of that gold? Is its real story the billions of years in space in a universe that wears out? Or is its story its brief moment as a symbol of human love that lasts only decades in the universe, but being love, remains when the universe fades to black? What counts to an eternal being? Who knows? But it's probably different from what counts to us. Third, and most bizarrely, cause and effect must look different when viewed from eternity. Perhaps things that are viewed in time as happening later than other things are revealed in eternity as essentially entangled all along. When two events have a foothold in the timeless, effect and cause dissolve into mush. As we will see later in the book, I find these ideas are important in providing a faith that's strong and elastic enough to do its job. But the God we're suggesting is not just eternal, he's also infinite. He's infinitely good at everything he is and does, and he's also infinitely good, where necessary, at hiding how infinitely good he is. If God is infinitely wise, we, who see a little bit, might grasp the outermost layers of his wisdom. Science does some of that, thinking God's thoughts after him. So do our hearts, perhaps especially when someone gets what we think they deserve. But what about when they don't get what they deserve? If God's wisdom is infinite, it must extend beyond our capacity to trace it out. Some of God's wisdom must look like foolishness to us. It does not look that way to God, because he's wise all the way down. God is so wise, he can ask questions of himself that only he can understand and answer. He can solve puzzles that only he can think up. The same goes for all his qualities. God is good all the way down, even though we limited humans see evil at work in the world. God is all-powerful, which must mean that everything that happens is in some sense his fault, yet God is infinitely able to set his creation free to do what it likes. Does that mean that everything isn't his fault after all? Or can you perfectly abdicate your responsibilities while also perfectly retaining them? For answers, refer above to the infinite wisdom of God. God is infinitely kind, even if he doesn't seem that way to us. Infinitely compassionate, even though the world seems cruel. Infinitely old and infinitely fresh and young and curious. He must be infinitely alone and infinitely companionable, infinitely solitary and utterly gregarious. He must be infinitely streetwise and infinitely naive. He must be unflinching and eternal in his hatred of injustice, and also infinite in his tenderness, both to abused and abuser. He must have an infinitely good sense of humour, which explains much about this universe, not least the New Atheist movement, or the existence of three-toed sloths. Footnote: the sloth is the world's slowest mammal. It sleeps for 15 to 20 hours per day, and even when awake, can remain motionless for such long periods that algae starts to grow on it. You can find cruel YouTube videos of them crossing roads, but see them moving languidly through the trees, and they're godlike, lithe and beautiful. International Sloth Day, I am not making this up, falls on October 20th each year, if anyone can be bothered to wake up for it. End of footnote. We've taken all the best things we know, including personality itself, stretched them until they are eternal and infinite, and identified the result as God, or at least our minimum basic requirement for God. There's surely more realms of godness that we have no capacity to grasp, but any God worth the name God must at least be this. We still don't know how he got here, nor can we get far in understanding his behaviour. I suggest that such a God, at the heart of our contradictory, improbable universe, behind our existence, behind our humanity, fits the facts better than any other theory. At least, it does for me. Well, that's our 10 minutes up. The next episode, episode 3, begins to look at the question of pain and suffering.